Hi. Thank you so much for coming. I truly appreciate your interest in what's going on in Israel, your interest in the Hebrew University. And this afternoon, our mission is to try to understand together what's going on in Israel. We will try to look at the situation both from an historical perspective, how did we get into this these times. We will look at it from a present time perspective, what's going on there nowadays, and try to look forward with some optimistic notes. I think that the struggle to save democracy is not lost. We are still in a process there, and I think that there is room for hope. And as you already heard, we are here for a discussion. I don't have all the truth in my pocket. Many things are just one perspective of what's going on out there. And I think it will be very important for all of us to hear each other. So we'll start with my short presentation, offering an overview of the situation. Then Ronit was very kind to agree to hold this interview to exchange views, and then we will be very happy to hear your thoughts about the issue, and I'll try to answer it. And again, I would like to take, of course, this, from my perspective, it's an honor to be here to give this talk in honor and memory of Harry, who was an extraordinary figure, both here in the Netherlands and from our perspective, his close connections with the Hebrew University. And I would like to thank the leaders of the Dutch Friends of the Hebrew University. Thank you to Lisa, to Heide, to Michelle, Boris, Ilan, and the entire staff. We are really grateful for your cooperation and the opportunity to work together. So as I said, let's delve into the issues. As you all know, these are troubling times in Israel. While Israel marked its 75 years anniversary of since its foundation, the country goes through what can be termed as a serious identity crisis. It's a crisis which divides our society. It's not a crisis that came out of nowhere. It's a process that is the result of the existence of rifts, of divide within the Israeli society. Various groups, various perspectives, various challenges. The central ones are the ones that relate to the Jewish-Arab conflict. The other one has to do with state and religion aspects. And these two main rifts, main debates, come into to this stage in addition to the very special situation in which our Prime Minister is indicted, is standing to trial for corruption. And this entire scenario resulted in a challenge to our society. So, in a way, what's going on currently in Israel started, if we look at it from a narrow perspective, it started in late December of last year, 2022, when a new government was formed. For the first time, it is a right-wing only coalition. It is composed of four or five parties that are homogeneous in their views regarding the conflicts that characterize Israeli society. And very quickly, just 4 days after the government was formed, it announced its plan. It is called the Plan for Legal Reform or Judicial Overhaul, other names that refer to it. And as I said, if you refer to it on its face value, what is it aimed at? What is the plan all about? It's a plan that deals with legalistic issues, not that interesting issues. This is what I do for a living, dealing with constitutional law, with issues of the judiciary and things like that, but these are not issues that one would expect result in such an unprecedented crisis in Israeli society. These are issues that the government decided to pursue a plan that will, in practice, do away with judicial review. It is a plan that the court, the Israeli Supreme Court, which operates also as a constitutional court, the court will not have the power to review legislation of the Knesset, of the parliament. It will be very limited in its power to review decisions of government, of ministers. And it's also a plan that the government will appoint the justices. Currently, the justices are appointed through a consensus way. One has to agree between the current justices, the coalition, the opposition, and other members of the committee. And the plan is that the government will have the exclusive power to appoint the justices. So if you look at the entire details of this plan, and we will not do that this afternoon, you will get a country in which the basic ideal of democracy, the very core of what democracy is, the ideal of limited government, the ideal of the rule of law, will be substantially curtailed, will be limited substantially. But of course, the more interesting question is why? Why is the government aiming at doing away with all these limitations on its powers? By the way, another aim is to limit the powers of the Attorney General. What is the purpose of all that? And there are many answers. There are several answers. What is the government aiming at? And up until now, I think that all that I've said is non-controversial. The government is open about these issues. One aspect that the government is trying to achieve is a greater power regarding the activities of Israel in the occupied territories, in the West Bank, trying to annex the territory, trying to give greater powers to the government in its activities towards the Palestinians in the West Bank. So this is one purpose. Another purpose is the standard purpose of populist governments, and that is try to secure its ruling by making elections less free, more limited. Another aim is, arguably, this is something that is formally denied, but arguably another aim is to enable the Prime Minister to resolve his criminal proceedings, to just to abolish them, to appoint a new Attorney General that will cancel the proceedings. But we will not discuss all these purposes. Of course, unless you would like to ask them, and maybe Ronit will raise some of them, but I would like to focus on another purpose that is at the heart of what's going on nowadays in Israel. And this is the main purpose from my perspective of what the government is doing. And it can be summarized in two words. And this is a Jewish state. The debate is, what does it mean for a state to be Jewish? What does it mean that Israel, Israel's constitutional identity, Israel's definition of the country is that Israel is a Jewish and democratic state? What democratic state means is something that is easy to understand. Israel is not unique in its at least quest or aim of being democratic. It's many other countries are the same. But what does it mean for a state to be Jewish is something that is open for controversy. Does it mean for a state to be Jewish that it can discriminate between Jews and Arabs? You know, in Israel, if we disregard the occupied territories, in Israel, within its formal borders, there are close to 10 million people. 80% of them are Jews. 20% of them are Arabs. Most of them are Muslims, some of them Christians, but in general, their ethnicity is Arab-Palestinian. So, what does it mean for a state to be Jewish? Can it discriminate between Jews and Arabs? Can it give preferred treatment to Jews over Arabs or not? For instance, a specific issue that we will address in a second is whether the government can establish villages within Israel that are limited for Jews only. Only Jews can live in these settlements. Another question has to do, when we refer to what does it mean for a state to be Jewish, has to do, as I said, with state and religion. And the question there is whether the government can impose religious norms on all parts of society. For instance, again, an issue that the government had to resolve has to do with the import of non-kosher meat. The government decided to prohibit importing into Israel non-kosher meat to make it less available for the population. Is it permissible? Is it a proper cause for the government to use its powers in order to achieve greater adherence to religious norms by members of society? And these are just two examples. Now, as I said, at the heart of the debate currently in Israel is what does it mean for a state to be Jewish? In what sense can a state be Jewish and democratic at the same time? Does it mean Jewish, the Jewishness that the country is committed to liberal values or not? And in order to understand what's going on there, what the debate is all about, as I said, let's take a few minutes to go back in time to see to how did we arrive to this stage in time, and then it will enable us to better understand the current situation. So let's focus for a second on two points in time. One point in time is 1948, when Israel was founded, and the second point in time is about 30 years ago, 1992, when Israel went through what is called constitutional revolution. So we'll look at what happened in 1948, what happened in 1992, and then we will return to 2023. And this will enable us to go to look into the future. So, first point in time, 75 years ago, 1948. As you all know, after the Holocaust, after the horrors of the Second World War, the creation of what was called then the Jewish problem, the countries of the world didn't know what to do with the Jews, with the asylum seekers and all the difficulties there. And the United Nations decided in 1947 the resolution that is the source of the establishment of the State of Israel, the 1947 Plan of Partition. The United Nations decided that the land of Palestine is a place that cannot live peacefully because of the conflict between Jews and Arabs. The only way out of the perpetual civil war that might result if these countries operate independently is by separating the area into two countries, one Jewish, one Arab. The decision back then in 1947 was a very wise decision. It said that two states will be established, one Jewish, one Arab. But it was very careful to note, to understand the difficulties of establishing a country which is defined, which is affiliated with one ethnicity. What does it mean? How can it be that a country will be defined as Jewish, but at the same time be committed to democratic values? And the plan of partition, the UN was very clear about that. It states that each of the two countries, but we will focus on the Jewish state. The Arab state was not formed, as you know. It says that the Jewish state must be committed to full equality among the citizens, regardless of their ethnicity, their religion, and so forth. It states that the government should protect human rights, be committed to human rights. It actually says that the only area in which the state can be Jewish is in setting its immigration policies. But this is because this is one of the main reasons for establishing the state in the first place. It was understood that in order to enable all Jews that want to do so to immigrate into Israel, to make Aliyah, you need that the Jews will control the setting the policies of immigration, because if the Arabs are in control, they would prevent immigration of Jews into Israel, because this will result in a Jewish majority within the territory. So the idea was, let's have a separate country which is defined as Jewish in the sense of giving preference to Jews in the right to return to Israel, to immigrate to Israel, and deny Palestinians to immigrate to Israel. But this is the only aspect in which the country may give preference to Jews over Arabs. And the plan of partition went further and ruled that the country should have a constitution, the formal constitution that will say all these things, that it is committed to equality. And it also said that when the country is established, at the very period, at the moment that it is declared as a country, as a state, the country should give a declaration that says, we are committed to the terms of the plan of partition, we are committed to equality, and this statement, this declaration, will have the power of a constitution until a formal constitution is enacted. So the plan was a wise one, a moral one, a legitimate one, I would say. And indeed, when in May 14, 1948, 75 years ago, David Ben-Gurion stood up and declared the establishment, the foundation of the State of Israel, the declaration follows very carefully the requirements set in the plan of partition. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, it is completely a declaration that would fit any liberal democracy. Nothing to be ashamed of. It says explicitly that Israel is committed to full, complete, absolute equality between all members of society, regardless of gender, religion, national affiliation, and so forth, and many other provisions like that. And it is committed in the Declaration of Independence to have a constitution and so forth. So, if we look at this one point in time, May 14, 1948, Israel is on the path of a liberal democracy. But things went wrong very, very quickly. The government probably realized that the plan of partition is not really binding. Countries of the world recognized Israel, legitimized its existence based on the Declaration of Independence, and very quickly the government decided not to follow these commitments of the Declaration of Independence. And over the years, over the period from 1948 until 1992, these first 44 years of the existence of the state of Israel, the country deviated substantially from the commitments of liberal democracy. The government harshly discriminated against the Arab citizens. In many ways, I will not go in details, we don't have the time for that now, it discriminated against the Arab minority within Israel. Of course, it established the occupation in the occupied territories starting in 1967, even worse treatment towards the Palestinians there. It imposed all kinds of measures that reflected an enforcement of religious norms on all citizens. For instance, no public transportation on Shabbat, civil marriage, only you can get married or divorced only through religious courts that apply religious norms. Only men can serve as judges in these religious courts, and many other aspects of this type. Fast forward, 1992, 31 years ago. What happened there is a constitutional revolution. But just one more issue before we go into 1992 to understand it. During this period, from the first period, from 1948 to 1992, I said that the government did all kinds of, from my perspective, wrong things. The question may arise, hey, what about this constitution that was promised? What about judicial review? What about legislation of the Knesset? Well, the answer is that none of these existed. The government actually was free to work, to operate, to implement its policies, free of limitations of both a parliamentary oversight or judicial review. From the perspective of the Knesset, as a parliamentary regime, the Knesset did not employ any review of what the government is doing. The Knesset decided not to enact a constitution. The idea was, well, if we enact a constitution, we should have to choose between two bad options. One bad option is to write down explicitly that we understand Jewish state in a way that reflects what the government is actually doing. And this is something that we would not like to do because of international criticism, of difficulty to write down that we are not committed to liberal values. And the other bad option is to limit the government to write down a constitution that is committed to liberal values, but this is something that the Jewish majority was not willing to support. And therefore, the government, the Knesset, decided not to enact a constitution. And this was possible because the court did not employ judicial review. The court decided that, well, the Declaration of Independence is not really a constitution. There was supposed to be a constitution. It was not enacted. Let's continue to wait for it. And the court was very passive at this time. It did not even have to bother to explicitly approve the government position. It simply decided not to deal with these issues. So this is how we come into 1992. And in 1992, a constitutional revolution happened in two important senses. One sense is the imposition of judicial review, and the second sense is the change in ideology, in change of what does it mean for a state to be Jewish. So in the first aspect, what happened in 1992, in 21st of March 1992, the Knesset enacted a law that is called Basic Law, Human Dignity and Liberty. This is, in fact, a Bill of Rights, a set of norms that say we, as a Jewish and democratic state, are committed to the values of the Declaration of Independence. We are committed to the values of protection of human rights, of human dignity. The government is committed to all values of human rights, and the Knesset as well. And the Supreme Court, when interpreting this basic law, said very explicitly, well, it is the Knesset's choice to now have a norm that has this constitutional status, that has this power of judicial review, that provides us the power to review legislation, and we will take upon us this task. It should be clear that this decision in 1992, it is controversial. This is the main controversy nowadays. The controversy results from the fact that this basic law is not really a constitution. It is not entrenched. It can be changed by regular majority. And it does not say explicitly that the Supreme Court has the power to judicial review and things like that. But it can reasonably be understood in this way. So the court decided there is power for judicial review, and it started to be very active. And at the same time, the court had to interpret what does it mean for a state to be Jewish. And it said a Jewish state can prefer Jews only in immigration policies, but not in all other aspects. And the result was, and I'm rushing into it because I want to reach to the current situation, the court said, the result was that Israel became to be a liberal democracy. For the last 30 years, again, if we disregard what happens in the occupied territories, if we can make such a distinction, Israel itself became a liberal democracy. The court said that it is impermissible for the government to establish villages that are for Jews only. The court said that the government may not prohibit importing non-kosher food and many other decisions. Back to our time, 2023, the government, the current coalition, is not willing to accept this interpretation of the court. They prefer the previous, the old definition of what a Jewish state means, that is a non-liberal interpretation of Jewishness of the state. They want to return to the time before 1992. Again, the decision is not to do that by explicitly enacting or abolishing basic law, human dignity and liberty, or enacting a new law that would say so. There was this nation-state law, but it does not say so explicitly. The decision is that we can return to the policies of 30 years ago if we simply do away with judicial review. If there is no judicial review, we do not have to worry about explicitly writing down our non-liberal policies. And this is how we reach to this point nowadays. And this is why Israel is so divided. We will elaborate on that in a second in the discussion with Ronit. I would just say final word. Israel nowadays is divided not about judicial review, not about the status of the Supreme Court. Israel is divided about the meaning of a Jewish state. It is divided between liberals and non-liberals, between those who believe in equality and those who believe in Jewish superiority. And it is a surprise for many of us, I think, that the silent majority, as it is called, rose into this challenge. If you look at what happened, I can share with you, and this, as I said, will be my concluding point. I am a part of a group of law professors. We were formed in November when we heard about the results of the elections. We formed a group and we started to argue against the concerns, what will happen if the government is doing what it's planning, things like that. And we thought that, well, we will be able to organize 100, well, maybe 1,000 people to protest, but who cares? The people would ignore us. We will not be effective. We were surprised and the government was surprised to learn how wrong we were. In a process that escalated very quickly, the Israeli society is out on the streets. If you look at the numbers, each week, starting in January, it's something like 40 weeks from now, every Saturday night, every Motzei Shabbat, close to 500,000 Israelis are out there. This is like, just to give you the numbers, it's something like 7.5% of the population above the age of 18. It's something, I think, something like equivalent to 1 million people here in the Netherlands that would go out on the streets every week for 40 consecutive weeks. Not only that, in a recent poll, people were asked, did you participate in one of those protests to save democracy? And 22% of the population, this is something like 1.4 million people in Israel, comparable to around 3 million people here in the Netherlands above the age of 18, that participated at least in one protest against the government. And what we see is that these protests, this campaign, is very effective. It is surprising to learn that nowadays we tend to think that people are just in the social media or only online or things like that. The good old way of making your point by going out to the street, taking the trouble of traveling, of risking yourself to be harmed or to be prosecuted and things like that. People go outside into the street and protest, and this proved to be effective. It proved to be effective based mainly because this campaign mobilized groups that have leverage over government. It includes the international community, mostly the American administration and the German administration, but also the administration here, is effective in putting pressure on government. It is to do with the economic sector, businesses, high-tech industry imposes the pressure on the government. The academia is committed to that. And reserve soldiers who volunteer to serve in the army, and again, we may want to discuss this later, declare that they are not willing to volunteer anymore. And this entire group of this coalition resulted in a pressure on the government that resulted in a very limited success of the government in pursuing its plan. It's very early to tell to where we are heading, but the struggle is far from being over. It is not deterministic. It's not that the campaign is lost. Although, formally speaking, the government can amend, can change the basic law by a regular majority that it enjoys. In practice, it does not do that in general because of the pressure, but the issue is still open. So we, as I said, this is just an opening remarks. We will elaborate now more with the discussion with Ronit, and then you are invited to raise your questions and remarks. So thank you for now.